The online version of the concert billboard at WUSB.FM has an upcoming schedule months ahead, so you know what to look forward to. Look for the WUSB Concert Billboard group on Facebook. Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM.
And you are listening to radio station WUSB, Stony Brook, New York. It's 2 minutes after 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
So many people have asked to hear the whole theme and to have less of us talking, that I thought maybe give them a taste of that. But, you know, we have to come in sometime and begin a radio show. It's in our contract, and that's just the way it is, unfortunately. Nobody likes it. It's just the way it is. You're listening to Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein here with you. Kyle joining us as well.
Hi.
You've got your own headphones this week. How are they working out so far?
Terribly.
Really that bad?
You
said three words and they're that bad already.
It's more distracting than anything, so it's just, I think I look cool, though.
You look pretty cool. There's no video of this, but if there were, you'd look pretty damn cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You mind just jiggling the cord a little bit?
Really? That's how we're going to fix things? Jiggling the cord like that? Am I doing it right?
No, that didn't help.
All right. I'll turn down the volume. If you want me to turn down the volume, I will.
Whoa.
Is that what you want? You asked me to turn that up, but every time you touch...
Oh, my God. It sounds like you're under a bus or something.
Yeah. Every time you touch a knob in this place, you get all kinds of static.
It's like nasal congestion or something.
Basically, everything here is encased in mud, so when you move, you're basically... That's... Oh. You can tell how old it is by the sounds it makes. It's sort of like... What's that science called where you do that, except not with headphones? You look at rocks and you figure out how old they are by seeing how many rings are around. No, those are trees.
Yes, I agree.
But it's like that. The kinds of static.
I can't even make out what you're saying.
Yeah. In fact, I lost my audio.
No, a little more to the left.
The listeners can't hear the static.
Oh, wait. You came back a little. Oh, there. That's good.
I don't hear anything now.
All right. Keep.
You know what? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I don't need to hear myself. I'd rather not hear myself, in fact. So, yeah, here we are. Here we are on another Tuesday. Another week has gone by. We're not going to be here next week. We're going to have a recorded program of some sort, or just a fill-in. I'm not sure exactly what. And we won't tell you where we're going to be instead until we actually go there and come back.
Right.
That's fair, right? It's not being too obnoxious.
No, it'll be exciting. People have something to look forward to.
What, us not being here? Yeah.
No. A surprise. I don't know.
It's definitely something different. And we always like to try different things. But you know who doesn't like to try different things?
I don't know.
People in the neighborhood. Your neighbors. The NIMBY people. The people that are afraid of anything different. Anything new. Anything alternative. And yes, there was the next talk on the mosque in Mount Sinai. Took place yesterday. The first public discussion in almost 2 months regarding the proposed Mount Sinai Mosque was thorough and at times heated during yesterday's Town of Brookhaven Planning Board meeting. This article comes from the Port Jefferson Patch, which is an online newspaper. Mohammed Samin's proposal to convert an existing 74 by 142-foot barn to a place of worship at 515 Mount Sinai Coram Road has led to much discussion over concerns residents have. Many worry about traffic that the mosque would bring, while other issues about the controversial topic were brought up as well. Emotions flared at times, as Vincent Pascale, chairman of the planning board, had to threaten to terminate the meeting after outbursts from the audience continued despite warnings. Many who brought comments to the planning board regarding traffic safety reiterated that their concerns had nothing to do with the mosque itself. And, you know, I just got to step in there. And the reason I'm even focusing on this story at all is because I cannot recall ever, not once, seeing this kind of response to a church or a synagogue that is being built or was being built. And, you know, they're built in residential communities all the time. So I've never heard of a crowded planning board meeting where angry people are all over the place and they're all concerned about traffic. I only hear about that when it's a mosque being built. So right away, that makes me want the mosque to prevail.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, proverbially, not literally.
Well, let's read some quotes here. Bob Howe lives off Mount Sinai Coram Road, says, "My issue is not whether it's a mosque, but this isn't really the place for it. I think there should be a turning lane. I've lived on this road quite a while, and whenever I make a turn, I worry I'm going to get rear-ended. Widening the road at the location, I think, is the only reasonable solution to the traffic problem." Might have a point. Local Henry Ellis added that while many are clearly concerned about the traffic, there are also other factors at play. Some feel that because they have traffic concerns, they could be prejudged as bigots, and that's a bad thing. But being a non-Muslim myself and being part of the community, I can tell you that there are some comments that are made that make you believe there's more going on here than concerns about traffic. Thank you. Creating a left turn lane was a point made by plenty who spoke, and another concern was the number of people the mosque would bring. There are 54 parking spots allotted in the proposal and well over a billion Muslims. So right away, there's a question as to where you're going to fit all the people if they all show up at once. It's not likely, but it's something to plan for. Are you certain that on a Friday afternoon, as the 50 cars that are provided parking are turning into that one-lane entrance to the mosque and the traffic builds up behind these vehicles on that one-lane road in each direction, that you can protect our health and safety? Resident Harriet Darvis said in an incredibly sloppy sentence. Wow. Could have phrased that better, I think. But members of the local Muslim community who mostly now travel to the mosque in Selden, yes, there is a mosque in Selden, are excited about the proposal, believe it will be a benefit to the community. To me, the convenience of being able to go to a mosque in a residential area is really great because you feel comfortable and at home, said Shah Mirzar. I think the major positive that comes out of these meetings is that we're all becoming, what? I'm sorry, I don't think this person said this. I think this is a typographical error. I think the major positive that comes out of these meetings is that we're all becoming aware of the possible problems we may encounter. Kyle, any ideas as to what that might have meant? No?
No.
Okay. As far as the traffic situation, I think that the 600-home hamlet and over-commercialization are larger problems than a house of worship. The discussion closed as Pascale gave a 10-day extension for written comment before the proposal was placed on the decision calendar. Samin again was pleased to hear from those concerned. We'd be more than happy to open up and address the concerns of the community. He said the project is for the community itself, so by all means, we're more than happy to address it, and we are concerned about the issues that affect them. Now, I don't know where we can write in about this, it would be nice if people did write in and just voice real comments based on how they feel, I guess. How they really feel and why they feel that way. So, yeah, mosque coming to Mount Sinai. Count the number of churches, count the number of temples, count the number of houses of worship that exist all around us. And then count the number of mosques and just see if maybe the objections outweigh what's going on other places. It seems a little bit strange to me. What else is going on? Did we do anything interesting today? Not today, this week, Kyle. Did we go anywhere? No?
No, not anything in particular that stands out. I'm still thinking, though, and I'm just adjusting. Now you sound beautiful.
Okay, I just adjusted the volume a little bit.
Well, I plugged into the CD player.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. That was smart.
Yeah.
That was smart.
Okay. I couldn't take it. I had no
so wait,
idea.
I can adjust my own volume now.
Do whatever you want with the volume.
I can hear myself.
I couldn't
again.
Hear you. I know the story, and I really think it's hypocritical. And I think people should give people a chance to express their right to freedom of religion in this country, and not obstruct it. I mean, we're not obstructing, you know, other things like, you know, other religions. So, yeah, I mean, I got the whole story, but now I can hear you really clearly.
But except it's not about religion. It's about traffic. It's about traffic. It's about crowds. It's about
the safety of our
children. Things that never seem to come up whenever they, expand a church or build some other religious building that is of the mainstream. So I really hope that this doesn't continue to be ugly, because I think it is. You never would have gotten that kind of turnout for something more mainstream. But we'll take phone calls later. And if you think we're wrong or you think we're right, let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes, please.
Yes. 631-632-6901. That will be the number when we open it up. It'll be in a little while, though. What else? I had other things, but trying to organize myself.
We did some interesting urban exploring this week. That was kind of neat. Just walking around different parts of downtown.
That's right. We did that, didn't we?
We also went to a very interesting performance. That was interesting. That was of note.
I should write these things down because, yes, we have done some interesting things. So what we did was, the first thing you mentioned was walking around. We walked down 4th Street.
Yes.
And the reason I wanted to walk down 4th Street is because it's a strange street in New York City.
Right.
If you look at a map, You'll see that 4th Street at one point crosses 11th Street and 12th Street. And it doesn't make any sense how this happens. Or maybe it's 10th Street and 11th Street. I'm not sure. But
no, you showed it to me. It's street and street.
Streets don't cross streets because they should be parallel to each other. But 4th Street is different.
They were crossing. It was perpendicular.
Yeah. There's that Bob Dylan song called Positively 4th Street. I'm not sure if he was as upset about the way the street is just going the wrong way. But also, you see the street do so many different things. You see it start off in Alphabet City, go through the East Village, then Greenwich Village, and the West Village, and all that. And it's...
I really like that, going from one end to the other to get the sense of the breadth of that entire street. And I grew up on a 4th Avenue way back in the day, and I had plenty of other streets in my neighborhood. So it was kind of cool to get the charm of like the local feel of this particular 4th. Street number or avenue. But this, yeah, it was really cool to go from the East Village and then all the way across town and see like the different changes, the changes in lifestyle, the noise, especially when we got over towards, I think it was Greenwich Village. It started to feel very, like, very old, and like a lot of the older buildings, the brownstones you pointed out. Mm-hmm. It's very neat, to get a sense of those areas in contrast, and it's only a couple blocks that you've like ventured, so that was really fun.
Yeah, that was it was a good walking tour of one particular street in New York. And if you think about this, almost every street has a whole bunch of stories, and you could just basically pick a street, walk down, and maybe it won't be as dramatic as 4th Street, but there are certainly a good number that have all sorts of variety from one end to another. And it's if you find yourself in the city, take some time and do things like that. And avenues, oh, wow, I can't even begin. The differences you'll find in avenues just walking around, because they go the length of Manhattan. And some of them are just incredible as far as the differences from uptown to downtown and just the various things you'll see along the way. So, yeah, that's a lot of fun. We did that on Friday night. And then on Saturday, you want to tell the folks where we went on Saturday?
We went to the ballet.
Yes, the New York City Ballet. You might have heard of them. They happen to be pretty good. And we actually saw a ballet performance of Sleeping Beauty. Is it The Sleeping Beauty or Sleeping Beauty?
I believe Sleeping Beauty.
Okay. And I've never been to a ballet before. And it was incredibly compelling. It just drew you in. I read a little bit about the story so I wouldn't get completely lost. And
right.
I, of course, knew the story from when I was a child as a fairy tale from the Brothers Grimm.
I was having trouble. I was mixing up all kinds of horrible, horrible Disney stories. So it was good that you had a good baseline of the actual story.
Well, Disney got his hands on that at one point, and it was ugly all around. But music by Tchaikovsky and, of course, the ballet itself, it was just incredible to watch. But I think what I was most fascinated by was the number of children in the audience. And first of all, a lot of children on stage, and that's something that we can speak to as well. But just, you know, imagine kids going to the ballet on a Saturday afternoon. I was just wondering out loud what their upbringing must be like, because I know when I grew up, I sure didn't know any kids that were going to the ballet in New York City. If I'd gone to the ballet as a child, well, there are already plenty of reasons for me to be picked on by the other kids. But this, I think, this could have replaced all of them if that had become known, if I had gone to the ballet, which I never did.
And actually enjoyed it.
And these kids really were enjoying it. You
Absolutely.
Know, boys, girls, they all really seemed riveted by it. But now you have a special connection because of your history.
I was a dancer for 5 or 6 years when I was about their age, like a young person. And that's how I got involved in a lot of theater and production and audio production and video production and stage and lighting and all of that thing. And and that's how I got into communications and, you know, those kinds of things. But I don't know. It was part of my life. It was just one thing that, like, my parents had the opportunity to expose me to. And I danced for a major company in Seattle.
What's it called again? The
Pacific Northwest Ballet.
And they call it the PNB.
Yes.
Right, okay. And you were talking to some people at the ballet about this, and you were basically talking about the same people. You knew the same people. It was really incredible to watch this.
Yes.
You were talking ballet talk.
Kent Stoll and Francia Russell were the artistic directors, and I think they were co-directors of the PNB when I was there. And they might have even been a couple, but I'm not entirely sure about that. I know that Kent Stoll stepped down, and the artistic director is a gentleman by the name of Boyle. I can't remember his first name, but I was speaking with one of the information representatives, and she was just really engaging, and she knew all about the different things, and I was recounting different dancers I had gotten, you know, autographs from when I was working in, on different performances.
Well, she was excited to hear that you were from there, that you had actually danced with them.
Yes.
You'd think that she would meet all kinds of ballet people, but she really seemed enthused when she heard that you were from there and you knew those people.
Yeah, yeah, and I had been in a bunch of different productions as a kid, and it's an interesting thing, the way ballet schools work, is that you pay to go to the ballet school for quite some time, and then the point is to work towards being asked to join the company, and as a company dancer, that then becomes your career, and you're actually paid by the ballet company. So the majority, after a certain age group, they're either there working for the company or they're in the ballet school trying to get affiliated with the company. And if it doesn't work out with that company, they'll switch cities and try to get involved with another company. That's sort of the nutshell of how that all works. And in any event, I had been... So a lot of the young people that are working on this production are trying to get the experience to be on stage and be in a huge production in a big theater. And that is exactly the kind of experience I had when I was younger. I was taking lessons from a very, very young age, and then got involved in auditioning and doing and working on a larger production that actually you're working with company dancers, but you're there simply for the opportunity. And it's a really cool experience because you get to practice and rehearsal, like after, of course, a long audition, which is an experience in of itself. And then, you know, getting a part is such an exciting thing. Even in a school play, kids, you know, that's a lot of discipline, a lot of work. And when you get a part, that's like thrilling. That's an exciting thing. And so then, you know, of course, rehearsals and, you know, dressing and costumes and makeup and getting over the jitters of performing and being in front of a huge audience of people that have paid to come and see some particular production. Those are all like really, really there's skills that stick with you, really important skills, I think. And I don't know, it had a huge impact on me and gave me a lot of confidence, I think. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of lessons to be pulled from that. So I had been just like some of those kids in the production that we saw this weekend, you know, working really hard as sort of ensemble and you know, building out the community or the castle or whatever city or whatever group of community of people they're trying to illustrate in the performance. You become a supporting role to that, and so it was really cool to see in Sleeping Beauty, and that's basically how I came to be interested. And I'd never ever seen a production outside of PMB. Never been to New York, never saw the New York City Ballet, or much less anybody, perhaps like from Europe or other dance companies.
Now you were pointing this out to me at one point during the show, that there were kids on stage. It basically looked like they weren't really doing anything. They were just standing there. They were pages or whatever.
Yeah.
And you were saying how hard it was for them to be doing what it was they were doing at that moment.
Yes.
You want to tell us why that's hard?
Okay. Yeah. So there's certain roles that you're building a community. You're showing the whatever it is, a family or a castle, if the story's Romeo and Juliet, or if it's Swan Lake, you might be a creature of some sort, or any other number of things. In the Nutcracker, I know, of course, there's huge family scenes, big parties, and so a lot of those younger kids end up with supporting roles, and they may dance, they may know, like, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, all the positions, you know, changement, all the different moves and that are basics.
What was that word that just flew by? What'd you call that?
Changement, that's when you shuffle your feet, you change... you're basically one at your front foot, you're sort of opposing each other, and then that you change the front to the back, and then and vice versa.
And that's a basic step.
Yeah, it's sort of you can do it with jumping and you know, but there's plié, relevé, a lot of arm movements that go in conjunction with first, second, third, and all the positions. In any event, so they may know all of that stuff, but their role is like servant.
Okay.
You know, so it's thrilling that they made this production. They're going to be in like 100, you know, maybe 40 performances of that particular production. But the entire time they'll be like doing costume and makeup so that they can go on stage and be a servant.
And basically a servant just stands there.
Yeah. But it's still thrilling. You basically stand there and support the king or queen. And a lot of the stories, if there's a royalty or like a family, they'll have entertainment because that was a thing back. You have musicians and that kind of, it translates really well to ballet because a king to queen, of course, they would have dancers. And so you could have like several different visitors of the king and queen. I mean, I'm being kind of hypothetical here, but it does translate. I mean, this is exactly how it goes. And so you'd have several dancers. So the servant supporting the king and queen because maybe they helped bring in the king or queen, or they held some sort of crown on a pillow or whatever it is. They're there standing there on stage because now the court is having entertainment. And it may be like five different dances of company dancers that are different roles, a jester, maybe a witch, or whatever it is. And so the king and queen are sitting and, you know, oh yes, they're being very royal and enjoying the thing. And of course the servant stands there.
Mm-hmm.
And the company dancers, they're professionals, they're being paid, and they come, they do their 10 minutes, which is really hard. I mean, they're on their toes or leaping or lifting, whatever they're doing, but they get to go off stage and get their breath. The servant stands there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up with these kids, like there were two guys that were servants and they were probably like, I don't know, 8, 10, 11, whatever. And they're standing there and they had been, you know, brought in the king and queen and then proceeded to stand beside them for like two acts, which could be like 45 minutes or an hour. And you can literally watch them because their legs are like standing very, very close together. Not even shoulder length apart. So they're standing there as servants, and you can actually watch them sort of swaying. And that brought me back, man, because I've been there. I did a couple different roles like that. And at one point, I think one or the other of a person I was dancing with, we fell asleep somewhere. I think we were actually sitting. We were lucky enough to be able to sit at one point in a production. But I got a lot of, I got a bit of a laugh out of that because they were doing a really good job. They were good servants, but they were standing there for like 45 minutes or an hour. But it's such discipline. They're very good. And so they kind of rock back and forth, and I could totally identify with that.
So I guess people who doubt that that's hard should be issued a challenge to stand in that particular position for 45 minutes with your feet close together, right? And not moving
still.
Visibly.
Yeah. Stand still.
Completely still, no emotion being shown. And yeah. And be 8 years old too at the same time. See how easy that is.
Yeah.
What motivates kids at that age to be so disciplined?
Again, it's part of dance and learning a skill like that. And the exposure, they get to stand there and they're not just standing there as a servant. They're standing there as a student watching company dancers perform in front of a live audience. And so they understand that how they're behaving is also a performance. So mm-hmm. as a performer, they're concerned about the audience, but also engaged in the performance because they're looking up to those company dancers and getting a lot out of that at the same time. And that is what being involved in a production like that is, getting that part is an opportunity to see the magic, like what happens backstage, what it takes. Even if you have sort of a lower role, you get the experience, you get the ropes of what it takes to audition and become a part of the performance, and then to that end, be able to watch serious company dancers do what they do as far as work.
So they really do an amazing job of that too. It's watching the true professionals, incredible maneuvers that the human body can perform if trained properly. It's staggering to watch.
Yeah.
We were pretty far up. We were kind of in the back, and that was intentional because, there's different types of people that you meet at the ballet. There are the people that are really, really serious into it, and they're more the casual observers. And I was kind of more into being with the casual observers the first time to see what it was like. And we had a lot of people around us, a lot of people brought their kids. And it was a bit of a challenge because, you know, you want to pay attention to what's going on. But at the same time, there is a bit of commotion around you because, yeah, they are kids. They do tend to whisper and talk and fidget a little bit. And at first, it kind of was annoying. But then I at least in my head, I sort of told myself that, you know, this is a big deal for them. Obviously, they're excited. They're acting like kids. And do you really want to be the person that tells them to be quiet or something like that? It tells their parents, can you get your kid to be quiet? Or do you just kind of ride with it and realize that it's a magical experience for them as well as for you.
Yes.
And, you know, we talk about this a
lot. I totally agree.
We talk about how kids need to be kids. And I think we need to practice that as well and in our attitudes towards the people around us.
Yeah, I mean, I think that speaks directly to kids then acting out as adults, you know, because they had so much, rules and being, beat down a lot. And this girl next to me would not stop moving. And I just was... I was like flabbergasted. I was like, this child cannot stop moving.
She was like six or something.
I don't know. Little. But I realized, dude, I don't want to be that grouch that is like grumpy about that. First of all, it's a matinee, right? Mm-hmm. We went in the afternoon.
Yes.
We went to, because it's interesting. There were other things. There were some interesting talks and some adjuncts to the matinee, but it's a matinee. If this was, nighttime, there were kids though that were dressed up better than me.
Yes.
And do I want to be that grouch? If this was nighttime, yeah, they could maybe expect that some grouchy old guys are going to be in there, telling them how to act at a evening event. But this is like the daytime show. This is when kids are around to be able to enjoy that. And as you said, it's for them to absorb and enjoy.
The thing to remember is that... If you are that person, exactly. If you are that person, what they're going to look back upon is that afternoon where some guy, some stranger told them to be quiet instead of the ballet itself, which is something that will last a lifetime. Assuming they don't go every weekend, but most kids probably don't. And you want them to take away something from that that's pleasant. And if that means enduring a little bit of noise, a little bit of commotion, count yourself lucky that you're surrounded by that kind of a thing.
Because
it takes a little bit of effort to get there. But I think we both got there after getting used to where we were in the whole building and the whole seating arrangement and all that. It was definitely cool.
I just turned and smiled. And I think that translates better. And what I realized is that she was looking through her binoculars.
She had little binoculars, ballet binoculars.
And, you can only imagine she's looking at every last move. Uh-huh. And that, that's huge.
Yeah.
So, it was neat to be around that kind of excitement.
These kids are potential ballerinas too,
Well, right, and it's a kid's story, Of course, let it ride and enjoy it as well. And I really had a good time. That was a great bit of arts and culture.
Well, so we did do something interesting this week. Honestly, we came in here and I hadn't really thought about it, but we do some pretty interesting things throughout the course of a typical week, and no doubt we'll do something interesting in the next couple of weeks as well.
Absolutely. And then we've just been so busy. I think we're a bit frazzled. It's like, oh, yeah.
Always frazzled. Always getting frazzled. But
note to everyone out there, you gotta take some breaks and not work too hard. It's good to work and be industrious, but
yes,
take it in and relax and gather yourself.
I'm going to go into delay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Let's do that.
I would like to open up the phones.
All right. I'll brace for delay.
Brace for delay. Brace for whatever impact that brings. Our phone number is area code 631-632-6901.
Hey, I'm Tim Carbone from Railroad Earth, and you're showing excellent taste because you're listening to 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook.
And just like that, we have seamlessly moved into delay. Our phone number, again, is 631-632-6901. Kyle, did you make it okay? Kyle? You there? Oh, my God. Hold on a second. Let me try and get you back. Oh, boy.
No, I didn't. Wait.
I'm
listening to the delayed feed. That's what happened.
Oh, is that what you're doing? Because you're plugged into there.
Exactly.
Oh, you see, that's the disadvantage.
It's not your fault.
The disadvantage of plugging into the tape deck over there.
I know. I took my headphones off as soon as I realized.
All right,
I thought it was going to stop being delayed, and it never stopped. It's still delayed. Oh,
yeah, it's going to be delayed forever. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's okay. I'm here. Let's take some calls. It'll be great.
Well, we need to get calls in order to take calls. And again, our phone number is 631-632-6901. What I'm going to do is go into a couple of stories, and after I finish every story, I'll go back and look at the phone. If there's a phone call, we'll take it.
Cool.
Fair enough. Now, sticking with the story of kids, a New Jersey grand jury has refused to indict a woman known as the Tanning Mom after she was accused of endangering her child by allegedly bringing her into a tanning booth. I don't know if you heard about this particular case.
What?
Yeah. Are you saying what for the case or for the mother or for the child?
Why do you bring a kid into a tanning booth?
Okay, you know, this is exactly... I had trouble with this story the whole time. Yes.
Kids get tanned. They're outside.
No. There's... Okay, she was accused of bringing the kid into the tanning salon, all right?
Okay.
There was no witness to anyone ever seeing the kid inside the actual tanning salon, maybe in the waiting room or something like that. And it's true, the mother looked like a leather glove. There's no question about that. She's one of these people that thinks that tanning is healthy, but she said she would never do that to her child. Now, the child had some kind of burn mark that the mother said she got from being outside in the sun, which is entirely possible. But everybody was judging based on the way she looked. And that's what I had a big problem with. And apparently this grand jury had a problem with it as well, because they refused to press any charges against her. So
I thought the mother got off, right?
Well, she didn't necessarily do anything. She basically abused herself and had a kid. You know, that's all I saw.
Right, they're just saying, like, because she's terrible to her skin, that she's influencing the child to the point where it's abuse.
I guess you could look at it that way. That's pretty much...
That's the attitude, but...
Leaping to conclusions.
I guess we'd have to find out, are there, like, age restrictions on tanning? Like, do you have to be over 18 or something like that? I mean, what... I don't know.
I don't get the whole thing to start with. I never did.
Yeah, it's foul.
And it's bad news all around, but... you know, it's her own body if that's what she wants to do. But yeah, putting the kid through that would be wrong. But there was no evidence that she actually did that, other than people afraid that she had done that. And that to me is just going a little bit too far. Okay, and now there's this report from Nassau County, and this is kind of interesting. Nassau County's 7th precinct is investigating two separate reports of students being approached by a man driving a white van. Police said that today. Yeah, you know, maybe I'm old-fashioned, but that isn't enough right there. Being approached by a man driving a white van, and everybody is panicking over this. When I was a kid, I was approached by people driving all kinds of things, walking all kinds of things, you know, riding bicycles, walking dogs. It's what they attempt to do that really is, apart from what's in your imagination, that you should be concerned about. Now, at about 6:50 a.m. at the intersection of East Shore Drive and Barbary Court, three ninth-grade girls from Massapequa High School got off a bus when a man driving a white van, a white work van with tinted windows, shouted something at them. And then the van started to drive towards the girls, who ran off. And then the van turned on East Shore Drive. That's the whole thing. Now, of course, there could be some crazy person doing that, but... You know, this is this really worthy of major news in our newspapers? I don't know. It's kind of weird, don't you think?
I don't know. There's a lot of repair vans that are white. I mean,
what would you be shouting at three ninth grade girls at 6:50 in the morning? It's like, you know, hey, there's a dog chasing you that you don't know about, or can you help me find my way out of this neighborhood, because I really shouldn't be here.
Right.
I don't know. It just seems like if you're an evil person, that's the way not to lure people, is to shout at them from a distance away in a white van. Now, of course, you can't blame the kids for being afraid, because we scare the crap out of them with all sorts of stories and a lot of reality, too. Bad things do happen. There's no question about that. Is that a healthy way to live? Every time you see a vehicle approaching you, assume it's the worst. Or anytime some stranger talks to you, assume they're up to no good.
Well, I think it's good and you give kids a lot of power to create things that aren't actually happening. And I think we're really sensitive to that in this culture. Everybody is so fearful, and they have all of these, you know, they're so guarded with their children. And what kind of kids are they actually raising in the end? So I don't know. I take a lot of issue with some of those kind of situations. But if he was up to something, I mean, no, that's bad, you know. And kids should be able to say something. They should communicate with their parents. They shouldn't hide or, you know, be afraid to say, well, this seemed funny. But parents have to really think about it. And, you know, parents can overreact. Kids can overreact. And drivers of cars can overreact. Maybe they're shouting at their kids because they were, you know, interrupting what, you know, his commute or something.
Now, later that day, though, about 3:45 in the afternoon, a man in a white work van with tinted windows approached a Seaford Middle School student. The student ran off, and one of her parents reported the incident to police. Again, okay, this is interesting. Now you have two reports of someone in a white van approaching children. But they either need to flesh out the details or not overreact, because approached a middle school student. What does that mean? Drove in their direction, said something to them? If so, what did they say? Things that might actually be useful in helping to identify what's right. going on here.
Rolled down the window? I mean, what was actually involved? No,
maybe this guy was
weird.
Really lost, and as right. you can see, for 8 hours he's been driving around. Wanting to know where he is.
Right.
Or it could be two different vans, or we could just have some kind of a panic situation. Now anybody with a van, a white van, is up to no good. But then there's yet another incident. Another female student from the Massapequa district was approached by a bald man driving a gray four-door sedan between 3:15 p.m. and 3:30 p.m. on Monday. The car drove past the student twice before making a U-turn and pulling over to the curb. And maybe you can help me with this, Kyle, because I don't understand this sentence. The man started at the student who ran safely home.
Stared, maybe?
Or started shouting.
Or
started,
what is that?
Or started chasing. Yeah, I don't know what they're trying to say here. And you say
startled?
You got it. Startled at the student? This isn't helping, Newsday. We're trying to save our children here, and you're giving us sentences that don't make any sense.
These are potential abductions that we're stopping.
So the man started at the student. So if you have a child and someone starts at them, then you better start worrying.
Yes, a lot.
So is this the same guy? They didn't mention the other guy was bald. And again, you know, if that matters, then they should be mentioning that in all the descriptions. Look for somebody who has a gray four-door sedan and a white van if you think it's the same person. I don't know. So, yeah, protect our children, but some common sense, too. 631-632-6901. If you want to call us and be on the air, you have about another less than 10 minutes to do so. Would you like to try and lure people in without starting at them?
Yeah, I'm speechless. No, I'm still thinking about that. I'm thinking about a bunch of kids running around with mace. And, like, how often they would just spray everybody with mace or something, you know?
Does that happen often?
I don't know. Do kids carry mace?
Well, maybe they should. Maybe that's the only way they can protect themselves from bald men in cars that start at them. Let's take the phone call here. Good evening. You are on Off the Wall.
Good evening, Emmanuel. This is Bobson from Bulgaria.
We have not heard from you in a while. We're starting to worry about Bulgaria. What's going on?
I haven't been able to call in this year, but... Not since before the Congress in Hamburg in December, but it's...
Did you go to the Congress in Hamburg?
Oh, yeah. It was awesome.
Really? Tell us about it, because we have not been there.
Well, you had people calling on the show from Hamburg with Mitch and various other delegates.
Oh, we've talked to people who have been there, but we want your perspective.
The place in Hamburg is about four times the size of the place in... Berlin that was used in previous years, so it, in that respect it's kind of awesome, and it was a great party from what I saw. That city is also nice. I mean, I spent a few more days there, and I walked around with various touristy things, and it's nice. Looking forward to next year in Hamburg. Maybe you'll make it this time for Congress, or maybe not. We'll see about that.
Yeah, it's it sounded like it was a good time, and it's a new venue, and perhaps we'll catch it next Congress, Bobson. It's just not in the cards, or we got a lot of stuff that we're planning and working on. So I'm glad you had a good time. Hey, how are things in Bulgaria? I heard there were protests and stuff.
There still are. Well, the government. The prime minister resigned last week, and then maybe he didn't, and then now the government is kind of in.
It was an election, or what? What was exactly the scenario with the prime minister?
Well, he resigned after some days of protesting about various, you know,
grievances and austerity kind of things.
Pardon?
Like austerity? What were the grievances? What were people upset about?
Not as such, but
like corruption or.
Well, the primary objection given by the protesters, who are not as organized as I would have liked to see them in terms of demands and all that, was the very high prices they need to pay for the electricity, for power, in terms of how much it costs to produce and how much. The National Electric Company produces the electricity and distributes it to some monopoly outfits that are selling it to consumers.
And wasn't it, is it like a bill or something? People, they got their recent charges and it just blew up after that?
Well, the recent bills were quite a bit higher than most people could afford, and it was not pleasant for various reasons, but the unrest is still going on all over the country from what I hear, and it's...
Well, it sounds like people are being heard. I was impressed to see the kinds of protests, and people were really, really upset with that, and as they should be. I think, you know, people work really hard, and they need basic utilities and infrastructure like that. So
Yeah.
I hope it goes well.
It's the most expensive end-user electricity in Europe, or Europe and North America, one of the two. In terms of how much people pay to use electricity at their homes, the prices here were kind of unreasonable in terms of how much people make.
Right.
In terms of wages and all that, it's not pleasant and twisted.
Well, Bobson, is there anything else that you'd like to tell us from the world of Bulgaria or anything else going on?
Well, about what you were talking about, that French term, changement, I think it was, I think a nice way to translate it into English would be changeover, in terms of, I think I know what the footwork is. I can visualize it anyway. Is changeover a good way to put it?
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's fifth position. So fifth position, you have...
No. I don't know the numbers. I'm just thinking that...
Your translation's right. And changement would be to change one foot from the other, because it's fifth position is basically like a set of shoes in a shoebox. You have like your ankle and your opposite toes on one side and the reverse on the other side. And then so that...
You think about the peculiar footwork that
yes.
Charlie Chaplin displayed in his movies with the large shoes and the toes pointing outwards and all that?
Right.
Isn't this like one heel to the other foot's toe in the feet and the toes pointing outwards or something like that?
Yeah, that might be an accurate way of putting it. But anyway, so you'd have one in front of the other, and to changement would be to change the front to the back, and back becomes the front. So,
I'm learning so much about ballet. I never thought this would even be possible, but wow, we should talk about this more often. Bobson, I wanted to ask you, are you going to be at the Dutch Hacker Camp this summer, OHM?
I'm hoping to get there. Okay. I haven't gotten tickets yet, but I'm looking forward to it anyway.
Okay, well, Kyle, what's the website for OHM?
ohm2013.org.
ohm2013.org. That's the website for people interested.
That's the URL, yes.
Yeah, that's for the outdoor hacker camp in Holland this summer, this August. And if you think that you can't make it to this, think again, because these things change your life. And Bobson, you were at the you were at the German camp a couple of years ago.
Yeah, we met there in 2011, and that was some awesome fun, despite the power was in the middle of the hook from across the ocean or what have you. But good thing you had people on the New York end of things to take care of the power loss that we suffered on camp. But who needs power? We were camping and we were having...
Yeah, we got all the power we need. We don't need the artificial
power. Or to Netherlands this summer, yes.
All right. Well, we look forward to seeing you there and hearing you in future editions of this show. We're running out of time now. So anything final you want to say?
Well, I don't know. I'm not very fond of ballet as such, but I think I may write to Kyle about it and discuss it, because I found out he was involved in it and all that. I would like to discuss it sometime, maybe in person, maybe over email. We'll see.
I think every week we should reveal something else that Kyle's involved in that's fascinating and interesting, because there are just so many things. Yeah, he has all sorts of experiences. Don't let his youth deceive you, because he's done a lot, and no doubt will continue to.
Did you just call me an old soul?
Well, did I do that? Maybe I did.
I think you did indirectly.
All right. Bobson, have a great night there.
You have a great evening. Thanks.
All right, take care.
Ciao.
Bobson from Bulgaria calling us where I think it's about 2 in the morning or something. Wow. Let's go back into the world of live radio. Here we are live again. Kyle, did you make it back to live radio?
Yes, I'm here.
One story, you know, there's a few things I wanted to touch upon, but we really don't have very much time left. Dennis Rodman is in North Korea. I don't know what he's doing there. Former NBA star Dennis Rodman brought his basketball skills and flamboyant style, tattoos, nose studs and all, to a country with possibly the world's strictest dress code, North Korea. Arriving in Pyongyang, the American athlete and showman known as The Worm, I didn't know he was known as The Worm, that's kind of a nasty name, became an unlikely ambassador for sports diplomacy at a time of heightened tensions between the U.S. and North Korea. But basically, the reason is leader Kim Jong-un is said to have been a fan of the Chicago Bulls in the 1990s, and of course is their heyday. So, yeah, can you imagine that? Dennis Rodman parading around the streets of Pyongyang. It's got to be weird for a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm sure it's pretty bizarre out there. But, yeah, I don't know. He hasn't done anything of note lately, so it sounds good. Sounds like he's mixing it up, and it's perhaps going to have an influence on how we perceive North Korea, and maybe he'll bring back some insight and vice versa. Maybe they'll see us as interesting in our own ways.
Well, it really is an amazing place. And I just like, no comparison, but I say if people should go to the Dutch Hacker Camp this summer. If you think you can't go to North Korea, think again, because you can. And if you really work on it, figuring out how to get over there, you'll pull it off, and it'll just be something you remember for the rest of your life. And I'm not saying it's a picnic. It's something that is 100% fun and enchantment. No, there's a lot of misery over there, but it's also a very different place. And the only way to learn about people is to talk to them directly and to see where they live and to interpret things on your own. One other story to close out on, and this, of course, is big news. We know that the Pope is resigning. In fact, he's not going to be Pope anymore in a week. He will soon be the world's first Pope to be known as His Holiness Roman. This is really His Holiness. Obviously, he's going to be the first to be known as His Holiness Benedict XVI. But Roman Pontiff Emeritus will be his official title. Vatican spokesman Reverend Federico Lombardi announced Tuesday that after the 8 p.m. close of business at the Vatican on Thursday, Benedict loses his Swiss guard. Yeah, they'll just march the other way.
Oops.
Yeah, they're only for the acting pope, and he is going to give up his papal ring. It will be smashed.
Destroyed.
He's going to destroy it. Oh, my goodness. He gets to keep the white cassock. What's that?
It's like an alb or a not an alb. It's a
that's not helping.
It's his cloak. It's his.
Oh, okay, a cloak. I know what that is.
Kind of is. It's like a big dress.
But you know what? He doesn't get to keep
his shoes.
The red shoes. He does not get to keep his red shoes. And finally, I understand what this song is all about. All right. With that, we're going to go out. Kyle, pleasure as always. We'll see you next week.
Indeed. Likewise. Good night.
Good night. Actually, in 2 weeks. We'll be here in one form or another. OTW at 2600.com. Good night.
Why used to be disgusted, and now I try to be amused. But since the winds have got rusted, you know the angels want to wear my red shoes. But when they told me about the side of the bargain, that's when I knew that I could not refuse. And I won't get any older now. The angels want to wear my red shoes. Oh,
rich.